Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and this is Internet Talk Radio, recorded from the west coast of Sweden. Wherever you are, you can find us from around the world through our website, redicecreations.com. That's R-E-D-I-C-E, creations.com. We are here doing radio on Thursdays and Sundays. Our website also features news updated every day with interesting, thought-provoking and important news stories from around the world and beyond. We also have links to research, videos and other material up there for you. And don't forget to take advantage of our member section. We have our entire radio archive available there for you, going back over 2 years. We also have extended interviews with many of our guests. We have video interviews, a members forum, articles, a short film, and much more of that is coming. You'll find all the information on redicecreations.com. Today we have Jake Kotze back with us on the program. It was about 6 months ago since we had the Synchromystic Wizard on the show, so we're well overdue for an update on what he's been doing lately and talk about some of the areas that he has been looking into. I know that he's featured in an upcoming documentary called Gnosis that I want to talk more about later on in the program. I also want to mention that Jake has moved his headquarters, if you will, from the Brave New World Order over to the Blob. That's the new place. You can go there simply by typing in rundonotwalk.blogspot.com, and that will take you to the Blob, so you can check out some of the work that he's been doing lately. If you are new to Jake's material, you can also go into our radio archive and listen to some of those programs that we've done with Jake that will give you a good background on some of the things that we'll be discussing here today. So with that, let's say welcome back to Jake Kotze. It's nice to have you back on the program. Thank you for coming on, Jake.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Heinrich.
You know, tell us a little bit about the Blob. You moved your headquarters, if you will, since we last spoke. Tell us about the Blob.
Well, it was sort of an organic process. I was writing at the Brave New World Order, actually doing videos mostly at the Brave New World Order at that point, and I wanted a space where I could, you know, write a bit as I'm doing videos, because the space between videos was just so great. It takes quite a while to make one of the videos, and I just wanted a place where I could put up a few ideas, random little cuttings from this and that. So I just started doing the Blob just for that. But then after a while, I stopped doing the videos and I really got into writing again and just continued at the Blob. And because I haven't gotten it back to doing videos, the Blob has basically organically become the main site just over time. Mm. I'm not entirely sure if I will, you know, stay at the Blob maybe, or maybe I'll leave the Brave New World Order for videos when I make videos again, which I'm intending to do shortly. So we'll see what happens. But definitely the Blob is where I'm based at this point.
Mm, okay, well, so you haven't kind of moved away from doing video material. It's not like a conscious plan in that sense, I guess.
No, it wasn't a conscious plan. I feel it's worked out well because it's allowed me to develop ideas in a different way than you would when you do a video. And you can really get into depth describing something when you're doing a video, 10-minute video for YouTube that I used to do. They're sort of brief and you're trying to just get the main points in there. But here you can really go into depth there. So it's been good for me to develop my ideas and explain myself a little bit more. I'm trying to get an understanding of how these things work. And so the Blob has just naturally become the site where I'm working at this point.
Mm, yeah. Brilliant. And I mentioned briefly the Gnosis clip. I linked that up on Red Ice a few days ago, so I hope that people that are tuning in have seen it. It's really interesting. It's well done. It's beautiful. It's nice filmed. The animation or the imagery is very nice to the brief talk, if you will, that Jake has given. Tell us a little bit about the background to Gnosis, Jake.
Well, it's interesting because synchronicity, what I research and how I research things, what I call synchromysticism, it's sort of part of how these things come to pass. I sort of entrain with synchronicity and then follow up on synchronicity, and I can sort of see how the things that are happening to me, like getting involved in the Gnosis project, it's been years now, but I can see the synchronicities as it's sort of worked up to the point where I'm involved in that project. Originally, I was in a store here in Winnipeg, in my hometown Winnipeg, called Custom Culture. And it's interesting because it's spelled KK, Custom Culture, with two Ks instead of the usual way you would spell Custom Culture.
Ah.
And I do a lot of work on double K on the blog. So that was interesting. So I was in the store and I was looking at books by David Icke, and somebody noticed me there and was talking to me about David Icke's books and about conspiracies and stuff, and said I should check out a documentary that's going to be shown at one of the universities here in Winnipeg that these filmmakers have made about Bolivia. It was called The Real Thing, and it was about coca, the coca plant and the coca farmers and how they get exploited by America, and you know, coca being used to make drugs and all these sort of subjects. So I got interested and I went and saw it at the university, and then I saw the filmmakers there and just, you know, took note that these guys are in town doing this stuff. And then we have a local newspaper as well, the Uptown, and the only good article in there, the only good articles that I used to read in there was by the same filmmaker, this Jim Sanders guy, one of the filmmakers, who's also the guy who does the Gnosis thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year, I went and researched crop circles with Ben Fairhall and got to the Eden Project, which are these giant geodesic domes that they have in Cornwall. And was walking through there with some friends, and there was cocoa plant in there as well. And I was telling them about this documentary that I'd seen that this Jim Sanders and had made. And I get back to London a few days later, and I have an email from Jim Sanders, who has noticed that I live in Winnipeg where he lives through the work that I've been doing on my website. So it's just all these synchronicities coming together. And then he eventually approached me to be interviewed for the documentary that he's making, a new one that will be out next year in January. It's all about consciousness and Winnipeg and synchronicities. So it all worked out very well and interesting.
Nice. Let's see here. The spelling is Nosis, for those who are,
yes,
you know, interested in taking a look at the trailer for this project. And also, were you handed the clip for this beforehand? Because I didn't see any of that in the, you know, official trailer, if you will, of you in there. So
yeah,
the
project that they've been working on it for a while, and I've only recently been interviewed for this, and other people have been. Alex Gray has been interviewed for this, and Jeremy Narby has been interviewed for this.
Ah, nice.
And that was also very interesting, because when I was that same day I'm talking about, when I was in Custom Culture, the first sort of lead that led to the Gnosis interview, the book I bought there that day was Jeremy Narby's Cosmic Serpent.
Ah, yeah.
And Jim and Jeremy Narby, they know each other, and they also know the same shaman, Juan Flores, who I believe is also mentioned in The Cosmic Serpent. They know each other, so the whole thing is sort of connected if you look at all these bits. And then very interesting to me with the double K of the Custom Culture store that I was in, and then the cocoa plant that I was, you know, talking to my friends about at the Eden Project when I was doing crop circle research. So there's all these interesting connections.
You know, I just got to mention that the Jeremy Narby book, that's actually one of the first, The Cosmic Serpent, that's one of the first book I actually first bought. I was actually also in a bookstore looking for David Icke books, but came across this book because it had the serpent and the cosmic, you know, in it. And I mean, I got to say, I don't know if you read it yet or not, but it's a wonderful book, and it's simply amazing, some of the information that he put together in that book. It's incredible.
Oh yeah, the book definitely influenced me a lot when it comes to how I think about DNA and consciousness and the twin serpent imagery of the caduceus, and how that relates to the kundalini serpent energy, and you know, the sort of influenced me a lot to get more away from the idea of ancient astronaut as entities coming from outer space interacting with mankind, to perhaps more entities or facets of our own consciousness that we are accessing through this kundalini DNA related energy that Jeremy Narby is talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the serpent in this case is kind of the mediator, if you will, of knowledge or of even information. I mean, one of the classic examples in the book that he mentions is the fact that when they take some of the substances that they do, that they manage to tap into it in such a way that they're given information about certain even medicinal plants and how to make a form of anesthetics actually, and this is apparently what Western culture has based their recipe, if you will, of anesthetics on. They went down into the rainforest and brought out and made synthesized basically some of these substances that these guys managed to put together. So I mean, it's an incredible story in the background there going.
That's right. And it's very interesting because it seems like the Western world is being influenced dramatically again by the rainforest through these plants and knowledge and information that they're getting from the indigenous people in the rainforest and other places. So it's like the West and the two worlds are coming together again, and sort of maybe this is part of this consciousness awakening that's happening on the planet. Or definitely is part of this consciousness awakening on the planet, the natural world and the scientific world sort of starting to merge and see eye to eye.
Indeed. And you mentioned Jeremy Norby and Alex Gray. Do you know if there are any other people included in the documentary?
I think Juan will be in there, and Jim himself will be interviewed in that film. And I don't know about other people right now.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you know when Yeah.
It sounds very interesting and relevant to me specifically because, you know, I live in Winnipeg, and this film will be about Winnipeg because Jim views Winnipeg as sort of a center. It's geographically located very near the center of the North American continent. And Juan, the shaman, you know, Juan Flores, believes that this is a gathering spot of energy as we head up to, this cosmic awakening, this consciousness that's growing up on the planet. He sees Winnipeg as an important part of this. And through synchronicity, Jim, I feel he feels like part of the synchronicity of Winnipeg being important in this. And we also have the amazing Winnipeg legislature building, which is this giant Freemasonic temple, this opulence that you wouldn't see anywhere except if you go to Washington, D.C., this amazing building.
Yeah.
This octagon at its center, in marble, and giant golden statue of Hermes or Thoth at the top of it, or some sun god.
Right.
He sees me being here and talking about synchronicities as part of that, sort of interacting with these energies and strange forces or strange attractor coming together here in the middle of the prairies. So yeah, I don't know what to say about that, but I'm following the synchronicities and just seeing where it goes. So
great, sounds perfect. And do you know? I guess they're working on the film right now. Do you know when it's going to be out?
I think January next year is the due date. So
right.
We'll see.
Brilliant. And I guess
they're working on a new because you said that there weren't clips of everybody yet in the. In the trailer, because they're still building it, and I think they're updating the trailer soon, so it should be interesting to keep an eye on what they're doing.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that because I took at the same time a look at the background, I guess you guys just went up to a rooftop somewhere in Winnipeg, is that right, or where are you?
That's right, yeah. It was just a local mural in the background that I've looked at before and just sort of enjoyed the circles and sort of Stargate symbols on it, and it just happened to be where we ended up shooting as well. And there's some other interesting things in the background. There's a tiger store in the background, which I like because it's a cat, and I'm interested in cats and all sorts of symbolism and synchronicities involved in everything if you really actually just sit down and scratch a bit below just the surface of how things appear.
Wonderful. I'm definitely looking forward to taking a look at that when it's going to be out. And I don't know if you know Jim personally in such a way. Maybe you can also actually approach him and ask if he would be interested in coming on the program with us here. We'd love to talk with him more about it because it seems to be a very interesting project that he's doing.
Yes, I think he would be interested in that, and I can definitely pass that on.
Brilliant. Yeah. And of course, you mentioned the store, the double K. I mean, that's something that I'd like to talk with you about. You've been kind of going into, I guess this has spawned from the whole thing that were going on in a while back, but this has kind of moved on, and you've been looking at things that is related to HH and also KK. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, to me, the sort of starting point, I remember MM, but I kind of forgot about it, and I read Ralph Ellis's book K2 Quest of the Gods, and he talks in the book about how he believes, after researching the Great Pyramid at Giza, that it's a map, that it decodes as a map that points towards the Himalayan mountain K2, which is the second highest mountain on Earth. And it's very interesting. The book talks about how, you know, K2 is pyramidal, which you can check up on Wikipedia. It's true. It has distinctive four sides, actually has eight sides. It's actually octagonal, sort of a distinctive octagonal shape to this mountain. And it has a like a glacier that is similar and in the same position to the causeway at Giza. Hmm. And, you know, he looks at there's a little, what do they call them? They come out of the king and queen's chamber, these lines that go all the way through the pyramids. And some people were calling them ventilation shafts.
Right.
People say they align to Orion, yeah, and all these interesting things about them. But he's taken those as geodetic markers, and somehow the math is a bit beyond me, but I'm more interested in the synchronicities about it. But he shows how those are, you know, coordinates. You plot those on a map, and they're coordinates. And it makes sense, because the Great Pyramid has got pi encoded into it, and it's a direct ratio of the size of the Earth, and all these interesting connections. So he thinks it's a map, and it points directly towards the mountain K2. And, you know, I thought that was an interesting idea. I certainly couldn't say if it's true or not, but the synchronicities are fascinating, because I thought I would investigate it synchromistically. And so I had a look at the two movies that I could find that Hollywood has made about K2 and another thing that was fascinating is that Aleister Crowley, and this isn't mentioned in K2 Quest of the Gods, Aleister Crowley was the first person to attempt to climb K2, which is an immediate red flag. That's just like baffling. Like, how does one guy say that the Great Pyramid is a map that points towards K2, and then Aleister Crowley is the first person to try and climb K2. You right. know, that's immediately like an interesting synchronicity of sure. note. And, you know, a year later, after Crowley climbed K2, he was meditating in the Great Pyramid, and then soon after that, he got the Book of the Law through his wife, you know, channeled that book, which, you know, is spawned Thelema and, you know, influenced the occult world no end. So, you yeah. know, those synchronicities are just kind of mind-blowing. And then if you look into Vertical Limit, I noticed an interesting pattern, and it sort of centers around this one girl, this sort of strange actress, which I'm sure most people have never heard of, but her name is Robin Tunney, and I've just become fascinated by her because her movies are just so incredibly connected to all the synchronicities I research. And she climbs K2 in the film Vertical Limit, mm-hmm. and the most dramatic thing that you notice is that in The Craft, she can be seen with Aleister Crowley books, or at least books that say magic, with the distinctive Crowley magick way of writing magic in frame, with her in frame. And I just thought, that's insane. Like, how is a girl climbing K2 in one movie, and in another movie she's with Aleister Crowley inspired books?
Right.
It just seems like such a dramatic coincidence. And, you know, then I started watching End of Days. Let's look at some other Tunney movies, I thought. And then she's the millennium. The End of Days is about the 1999 millennium. And it's got the World Trade Center is in that film, featured in all these scenes with Arnold Schwarzenegger. You can see the World Trade Center in shot. And it's the 2K millennium, right?
Right.
That's how we were shorting down. People were going Y2K or 2K for 2000. Hmm. And many scenes have Robin Tunney passing right by these banners that say 2K, you know, and that's just K2 flipped.
Right.
So there's these interesting synchronicities. So I just kept looking closer and closer, and then crazy things started coming up, like the paparazzi movie that she's in. Oh, no, actually, I mean the Zodiac movie that she's in, which is about the Zodiac killer.
Right.
It's an older one. It wasn't the newer one with Jake Gyllenhaal. It was an older Zodiac film where the cover has all the elements that you would see in the Book of the Law on that sort of infamous, mysterious grid page that's in there that has this grid that Crowley drew over one of the pages with a target symbol.
The cipher page?
The cipher page. That's right.
Right. Yeah.
So this poster just happens to have a grid on it, a target symbol on it, and a diagonal line. And, you know, these things just started blowing my mind. And I, the more I looked into Robin Tunney's movies, I found so many where the target, diagonal line pointing right at her head, all over, all around her. You know, it's just very interesting line of reasoning. And so the K2 thing has really become a pivotal synchronicity. And, you know, MM, which people like Goro Adachi and Ben Farrell have mentioned, the MM, you know, it's also, that's Roman numerals for 2000, and 2K is also 2000. So there's a connection between MM, and there's many, you know, interesting MMs, Marilyn Monroe, Marilyn Manson, Eminem the rapper, or Mary Magdalene, et cetera, et cetera, seem connectable to K2. And then more recently, I've been going into this sort of mind-blowing little fact is that K is the 11th letter of the alphabet, right?
Hmm.
And the solstice on 2012, this date that's everybody has become really fascinated with, the Mayan calendar's end date is on the solstice in 21 December 2012. And the exact timing is 11-11, which is K2, because, you know, 11th letter of the alphabet is K. So you even have the 2012 phenomena or theme smack interacting with K2, the mountain that Crowley climbs and the pyramid map that Ralph Ellis talks about. So this whole thing is really fascinating to me.
Wow, that's really interesting. And it feels like it's a bit in a synchronistic way. It's about, you know, really pointing out that this is the switch of the new millennium, because as we all know, this is maybe not something that happens bam smack on 1 second point in time, as it were. It's more like a transition period over a few years. And if we think of a millennium, 12 or 13 or even 15 years isn't that long, you know. So in a way, it's more like we have this overgoing period from, you know, 1999 up to 2012, 13, 14, something like that.
And that's right.
It can be, you know, a resonator, if you will, of that incorporated in all these themes that you've been talking about, that this is the switching over to something new, right?
That's right. It's a consciousness phase that I feel we're going through as a species. We seem to be evolving, and I feel it's very simply, we are becoming aware that we are aware, and that, you know, consciousness that is animates and is that we all share, this pool that we all come from, the consciousness itself, the primordial, unmanifested, you know, consciousness before it takes form, consciousness, you know, unmanifested consciousness is becoming aware of itself through us. And we can, through synchronicity, we're starting to see all these patterns because, you know, we are these patterns. We are this consciousness that's all one. And that's the synchronicities is showing that everything is connected and that there are patterns in it. Like, it's a new way of thinking that's beyond thought, because thought was so limited and it didn't stop there. Evolution hasn't stopped there. So synchronicity is sort of a new language that we are evolving that's pointing towards beyond the limitation of thought, because we can now see, oh, well, there's a connection here and there's a connection here. And I use media because we all know those things. That's a common, you know, we're all familiar with movies and actors and stars. So, and I mean, there's something profound as well about putting on a movie and drama. It's sort of a magical ritual in a way as well. It's a reenactment, and there's a lot of magic involved in that as well, I feel. But I feel like consciousness is waking up, and synchronicity is part of that realization. And I mean, none of this would be possible without synchronicity. That's exactly what we're talking about, right? It's 2K embedded in all these facets of this awakening process. And there's other facets. 2K is just one of them. It's just a very vivid and interesting one. And as you're saying, yeah, it seems to be a period, you know, a phase. It's not like one moment. But I feel like 9/11 is key to that. It's this dramatic impact that happened, you know, that on everybody's consciousness, and it seems to be a symbol for this awakening process, or part of what kickstarted it, inseparable from it. And I've been thinking of it as I've been reading John Major Jenkins' Galactic Alignment book, and it's very interesting. He talks about there being an access. The 2012 alignment draws an access in the skies, and it's from our vantage here on Earth, it would be galactic center is at Sagittarius and Gemini, and then the line would be traced from galactic center through the Earth, and the end of the axis would be on the other end of the zodiac, which is Taurus and Gemini, and you know, the other end is Sagittarius Scorpio. So you have this axis being drawn by the galactic alignment in 2012, and in a way you can think of the Gemini on the one end, the start of this axis, the bottom of this axis, as the World Trade Center disaster, because you have this, the twin towers, right? The very dramatic twin symbolism there. And also the 11/11 embedded in that, because you have this September 11th event with this giant 11 building coming down. So you got the 11/11 there and this twin energy.
Yeah.
And then at the other end of the axis, you have galactic alignment in 2012. So it's this whole phase that seems to be marked out in the events that are happening around us. And you can sort of read the symbolism by just comparing them to things that resonate each other.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like, and we also have, you know, 2001, that's the first year leading up to 2012. That's potentially that we're going through the 12 steps of the zodiac right there. Who knows?
Yes,
like one year is symbolizing one of the zodiac signs. I don't know if that's pretty interesting. One might actually be able to... interrupt. Go ahead, Jake.
No, that's an interesting thought. You know, the 12 zodiac signs and the 12 years. It's interesting. Very interesting.
One might be able to, you know, go back and actually look at the... you know, what is prominent with the years that we have been going through, and see if there is a kind of a homogeneous, you know, symbol that has to do with that year, and maybe we can pick up something from that. That's pretty interesting.
And then there, of course, is the Aquarius thing. You know, we're moving into the age of Aquarius at the same point with this galactic alignment, as if these things are in training with each other, sort of this giant processional year that's coming to a close around this time, and then the galactic alignment as well, and Aquarius with the water. I've been thinking about that, the symbol of Aquarius, the sort of wavy lines or those energy lines. You can think of them as lightning or energy or water.
Yeah.
And it seems to be that symbolism is also very strongly encoded in the media, the water, the idea of, you know, flooding and so many. I was just recently watching one of Steve Wilner's videos, and he showed this clip from the movie Deep Impact, where Manhattan is just being flooded by this titanic wave, you know, and the World Trade Center is just getting swallowed by this water. And I'm like, that's Aquarius. That's the water door, the Stargate, correlating with the 9/11 event. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it is definitely. And exactly, it's a kind of a sign of the... well, in that sense, the initiation into a new era or a new time or what have you. And I mean, it's true that you mentioned. I mean, we can just look at the what was it called, the Superstorm? No, that's the book actually. The Day After Tomorrow, right? Same thing there. You know.
Yeah. Interesting movie as well, with all that, you know, ice, water, Aquarius symbolism, and New York and Manhattan, you know, that stuff is very interesting. The poster has the Statue of Liberty either submerged in the water with her head sticking out, the top part of her sticking out, which, you know, also the Cloverfield poster has the head of the statue removed, and, you know, the Escape from New York poster has the head of the Statue of Liberty, which is Isis, and Isis is the Milky Way or galactic center, and, you know, the head is also... in Hindu mythology, it's the Rahu, which is the part of the sky where the lunar nodes are. It's also in galactic alignment. You know, the lunar nodes are the parts where the where eclipses tend to happen, where the moon and the sun's orbit pass each other, and you get the southern and the northern lunar node. And I believe it's the northern one that is the same area, just happens to be the same area in the sky where galactic center is. And in Hindu mythology, that was represented as Rahu, which is this giant head. So the idea of this head symbolism with Isis and disembodied, you know, the head on the poster of Cloverfield, which is missing, and in the movie it's lying in the streets of Manhattan, right?
Right, right.
Which is where the 9/11 event happened. And you know, Zardos is this movie with Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, right? Yeah.
Right, with this giant Oz head, and we can go into Oz. So I mean, this stuff is just interesting, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. And tell us a little bit about Oz. That's a pretty interesting connection there.
Yeah, it also, you know, dovetails with Crowley, because you know, he wrote Liber Oz, O-Z, and that has the Kabbalistic, you know, Hebrew value 77, and that's connected to Pan, the goat god Pan. And the most vivid example I can think of right now, I mean, apart from George W. Bush reading about a goat as 9/11 was happening,
right,
you know,
right,
which is insane and very interesting and telling, and you know, I don't know what, let's not go there right now. maybe a little bit later we can go into that one.
Right.
But I'm thinking of The Wiz, the movie The Wiz, where it's The Wizard of Oz, but it's set in New York City, and the Yellow Brick Road ends right at the World Trade Center, in between the World Trade Center, at the statue of the sphere sculpture, which used to, you know, sit right between these two big buildings. And on the sphere, they have the OZ, you know, and the sphere sculpture is intended by Yamasaki, the designer, the architect of the World Trade Center complex, to be the Kaaba at Mecca. And, you know, Ralph Ellis, again, he says that those processional rituals that they have around the Kaaba evolve directly from processional rituals you have at Giza. So, and even this thing turned. It was turning every day there at the World Trade Center. Yeah. So it's this thing that's spinning and people are walking and it's sitting in a fountain. So you, again, you have the water door or Aquarius or the Stargate, circular fountain with this Oz 77 Pan sculpture in this movie with people dancing around it in between the World Trade Center. And yeah, so Oz is fascinating. And you know, the Oz in the movie, the great and powerful Oz, looks like this gray alien, and it has this giant green gray alien head. And Crowley was one of the originators of that sort of symbolism with his lamb drawings of the preternatural creatures he contacted during ecstatic magical rituals. So very interesting stuff, right?
Yeah, indeed. And even you mentioned Sardoz earlier, and that's of course a derivative from the Wizard of Oz, you know. So
that's right. It's the great and powerful Oz, and you know, the disembodied Rahu head, which is galactic center. Nowadays I think of any monster mouth, any sort of symbolism in movie where you have a big monster head or a monster mouth, that's sort of galactic center to me. This portal in the sky that we are aligning with, that, you know, the heart of our galaxy that seems to be in training with this 2012 event.
Indeed.
And yeah.
And, you know, I think you made a little connection also between the Twin Towers and the age, isn't that right? And this can lead us into age. You have a little explored that area a little bit in recent posts, I guess.
Yeah, the first time I became aware of that idea, I was at this other great synchromistic type blogger, Gosporn. I think that's how you pronounce it. He noted that there's many synchronicities about double H. There's like, I think it's Halley Henson, this brand name. They have this double H in their logo. And then somebody else on the internet, I unfortunately forget their website's name right now, showed that Will Smith has his, on the Hitch poster, he has his hands on the first letter and the last letter of the word hitch,
right,
which is the double H again. And then while I was thinking about these things, you know, these things always in training with my personal life, you know, you keep them in mind and you just go about your day and then they'll pop up again. I was looking at the cover of Manhattan, the movie by Woody Allen, and the font of Manhattan is the skyline of Manhattan. So they've actually stylized the word Manhattan of the movie Manhattan to look like the skyline of Manhattan. So the letters look like buildings, the tops of them, if you understand what I mean.
Sure, sure.
And the H in Manhattan, on Woody Allen's Manhattan, is the World Trade Center of Manhattan. So I was like, oh, there is this World Trade Center H connection. And you know, I was thinking further about that artist Paul Lafalle. He did a radio show with Radio Orbit, Mike Hagen, I think.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how he suggested to Yamasaki they should connect these buildings with a walkway, you know, so it would look like a giant H, basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's interesting. And then all these other H connections between the World Trade Center, and sort of seemed to me maybe that it's symbolically like the two buildings were in media reaching out to become one, which has now literally happened because they've become down and now they've taken the two squares, the floor plan of the World Trade Center from the top, two squares, put them into each other and sort of created this octagonal building, the Freedom Tower.
Yeah.
Sort of like two were reaching out to become one, and now they have. They've been incorporated into the giant Freedom Tower spire, which is being built, you know, at ground zero. And
yeah,
again, the octagon, which, you know, mentioned earlier, is right in the center of the Winnipeg legislature. So it's, and it's connected to masonry, and you can just tell because they have the double square symbol, and they and Solomon's Temple, with which is said to be underneath the Dome of the Rock, which is an octagonal building. And there's this other amazing this I never see people mention this, so I don't know how accurate it is, but I did find a website on the internet that shows Giza and how the three pyramids of Giza fit perfectly snug in a giant octagon that you can trace around its perimeter, the three major pyramids, with the most center pyramid then smack in the middle of this giant octagon, mm-hmm, and their base is touching the edge of this octagon. So it seems, if this website is correct, that you know, the plan of Giza is based around this giant octagon. So you have the octagon, mm-hmm, and you know, the King's Chamber is also a double square. It's exactly two squares in length. So you have all these double square connections with this esoteric knowledge that the Masons seem to encode in all their symbolism coming together in this Freedom Tower that's being built and to be finished. There's a sign at the World Trade Center complex that says to be finished 2012. Some places like Wikipedia nowadays note it as to be completed in 2011, so I'm a little bit confused which it is, 2011 or 2012, but it seems to be in training at least of the same period, right?
That, yeah.
So we'll see.
We'll
this giant
exactly. We'll
octagonal
see.
Structure being built there, yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting, definitely. And, you know, we can go back, I guess, a little bit more, talk about Robin Tunney. She's been kind of a node in your work and been popping up here and there in many of your posts. And, I mean...
Yes.
What do you think overall about her as an actor? Is she more, you know, something just evolving around her that is really interesting to keep an eye on, or something else going on there? What do you think?
It's a mystery. It's a total mystery to me. I'm following this thing, and I'm trying the whole time to discover: is it my interaction with it that is creating the synchronicities? Am I looking so in depth at this one person's career that I'm just finding all these synchronicities? And if I'd picked somebody else, you know,
yeah,
would I still have found that?
Right, right.
That doesn't seem to me to be the case, but you know, I consider that as an option. But it seems to me it's more pointing towards the actual nature of synchronicity and our own consciousness and how it interacts in the present moment with what you're doing. Because since I've been looking into the Robin Tunney thing, you know, mysterious things have been starting to happen. And now I'm sharing this, you know, K2 experience with Robin Tunney and the Aleister Crowley experience. These are powerful sort of iconic consciousness symbols, you know, and people who have opened stargates and talked to preternatural creatures. You know, you're interacting with powerful symbols in consciousness when you're doing this sort of work and showing all these connections. Since I've been doing this, you know, she's in an upcoming film is called August. This I had no idea about this when I started doing this Robin Tunney thing, but it's sort of like it's interacted with in real time. Sort of, it's the more synchronicities you're plotting, you're interacting with the force that creates them. So it's like, yes, I'm sure independently people are still making movies without any conscious knowledge of my blog, you know.
Right.
But
right.
There's this force that's interacting real time with the synchronicity experience and synchromysticism, because this film August that's coming out is actually called August because it's about the events that transpire in this character Josh Hartnett's life on the month before September 11th, and that's why it's called August. Oh. And it has the World Trade Center on the poster of this film that Robin Tunney is in her upcoming film.
Right, right.
So it's fascinating. Now, you know, there was no connection before directly between Robin Tunney and the World Trade Center, maybe slightly through End of Days, which has shots of the World Trade Center. But now this is a movie called August because it's the month before September 11th, and it has the World Trade Center in the picture. So it's directly referencing the World Trade Center, and Robin Tunney is in this film. So,
right, know, and it's the 8th of the month, right? August, so the octagon right there again
octagon.
In the name.
Octagon, you know? That's correct. Mm. That's right. Yeah.
That is interesting.
very interesting. And I can name a few other examples of interesting roles. She's been in the movie Supernova, right? She jumps through stargates. That I call anything that alters time and space a stargate. It's just sort of a blanket term for anything in a movie that time travel or warping or teleportation or, you know, going to another dimension. And those are stargates to me, because I feel that anything that alters time or space is basically pointing towards the same symbolic principle, and I just call that the stargate.
Yeah.
And in Supernova, she's in a spaceship that opens up vortices and faster than light travel and all that. And then in the movie Paparazzi, she basically becomes Princess Diana because she's involved in a car crash because of the paparazzi stalking her famous husband, right?
Mm, yeah.
So she's like lying in this car crash, and photographers are taking photos of her, and she's completely entrained with Princess Diana, which is another powerful, iconic image. And in this Robot Chicken episode, which is one of her more recent things, they lampoon an old show called Magic Garden, and she opens the Ark of the Covenant. They have a box in front of her, and in this show, I've never seen the original show, but it's like they have a magic box. It's like a kid's show, and the box will open and it'll tell them stories. But in this Robot Chicken, which is a spoof show where they take figures and they do the stop-motion jokes with all these popular culture themes, they've turned this box that usually just tells stories to the kids to the box from Indiana Jones that opens and all the ghosts come out and the Nazis face melt and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So she's literally sees inside the Ark of the Covenant, the holiest of holies, the cuboid that's evolved from the King's Chamber at Giza, the Tabernacle and all that stuff, right? Directly connected to Solomon's Temple and all this stuff. So she's interacting with the Ark of the Covenant and, you know, the World Trade Center and all these things. And then there's a zebra connection, which I find very interesting. In the film Cherish, she can be seen in shots with this zebra right at the back of her head. And I like it in movies where the symbol that you're looking at is actually touching their head, like the outline of their body is literally merging, because, you know, a film is two-dimensional. So the objects that are moving behind them can sometimes sort of come in and out of their bodies, you know, from your perspective when you're watching. And that seems to me to be a stronger sort of resonator than something that's just sort of cutting from one scene to another, you know.
Right.
Here's Robin Tunney and here's a zebra. That's less interesting to me than a zebra sort of actually coming out of her head, which it is in this film. And then in The House MD, I don't know if you've ever heard of that show.
No.
It's a doctor show that's very popular in America. She's in the pilot episode, the first episode, and she's called a zebra because medical anomalies are called zebras in, like, I don't know, medical vernacular. It's like if you're a doctor, you call people who have odd diseases that you don't know what they are, you know, zebras.
Interesting.
So she's connected to zebras in two films. And Valis, you know, Philip K. Dick's higher consciousness being or alien or computer from the future was originally called Zebra. So there's an interesting zebra. Yeah, yeah. It was originally called Zebra. He then changed it to Valis later on. So zebra is an interesting symbol, I find, of higher consciousness and, you know.
Well, that's right. I mean, it is a kind of a, well, I mean, I guess we shouldn't call it checkerboard in that instance, but the black and the white again, of course, coming together or being symbolized in one creature like that. That's pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah, and if you look at the tarot card of the Chariot, the Rider-Waite tarot card, the classic deck, the two sphinxes that draw the chariot have they're you know, the Nemes, the Pharaoh Nemes, you know, the that distinctive blue and gold striped headdress that the Pharaoh would wear.
Yeah.
Is depicted on the chariot card, which, you know, is very interesting because the chariot is something that comes up in my work a lot as well. As the checker cab, as you were mentioning the checkers, you know, the checker chariot, classic checker cab, and, you know, horse-drawn chariots, all sorts of vehicles, basically chariots, keep coming up, and chariots of the gods, you know, sort of the symbols of UFOs and things like that. These sphinxes on that tarot card I'm talking about have the black and white stripes around their heads, just like a zebra. So I find that very interesting.
Oh, indeed. You know, there's so many different connections going on all the time. And as you say, it's a balance between kind of, you know, the way to approach it in a way, I guess, is that, okay, the more you look into something and the more detailed and the more focused you become on just one thing, obviously enough, the more of that you discover everywhere. And, I mean, that kind of also, in a way, opens up a whole different idea of you know, what we are a part of as you know, as if we talk about existence. Because in many cases, I think that if we spend enough time and if we look at something focused enough, we are going to discover all of these incredible connections to everything else, just because of the nature of how reality probably is composed, if you will. If we look at it from a holographic theory, then that makes perfect sense in a way, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And if the, you know, Zen masters and the sages and the enlightened people who you hear talk, or if they're correct, you know, they say that we are consciousness, we are awareness, right? Our minds cut things up into things, you know?
Yeah.
Everything actually bleeds into each other. It's all actually one continuum, everything. You and the external world, every object you see, you know, it's consistently changing. It's only, you know, the computer screen right in front of me or my sock will one day completely deteriorate and become all its constituent parts and it'll become something else. Everything is this sort of, you know, moving, consistently changing, going in and out of each other.
Yeah.
You know, all the things that are inside of us become part of other things. And, you know, it's so everything is sort of bleeding in and out of each other. We just cut it up in our minds into distinct things, you know. The idea of thing itself comes from mind and the way that our mind works. But beyond that, you know, there is that which allows us to be aware of things, the actual consciousness that we are, the very fabric, you know, that everything is imposed on, that it emanates from. So we are the consciousness, the pure consciousness. And when we're looking at things and we are paying attention to things, then that is our true nature. So when you're looking at a thing and you start to allow it to just be without your mind cutting it up into the usual mundane criteria that you would have for the thing, you can start to see how it's actually bleeding in real time in the present moment as you're sitting there into everything else. And synchromysticism is allowing you to see that by giving new context to, you know, things that were generally only allowed to be in one box. You couldn't go Robin Tunney, Aleister Crowley, pyramid. It was just insane. But and maybe a lot of people probably still think that. But that's the point. It's just consciousness is growing and waking up, and we can see this. And I think synchromysticism, through synchronicity, helps to show how we're all this one continuum, and you can actually learn so much depth about things, about ideas, about concepts, and about theories by allowing your usual mind process to let go of its regular conditioned way of grouping everything together in this consensus trance way. You know, right. There's a society has a way that it condones you must think about things, right?
Yeah.
Or it's appropriate to associate these thoughts with these thoughts. But if you do it in another way, then no, that's wrong and that's madness. And, and you know, it's basically, that's a prison for your mind to be there. That's why society is blind and allows all this madness to go on, because it's crazy and it's blind, and it allows this dynamic universe that we're all embedded in and we're part of to just, you know, be ignored.
Yeah.
Your mind just cuts it all out and ignores it, when, you know, you can actually see it's amazing. Every single moment is amazing if you allow it to be.
Indeed. And it feels to me that, you know, everything that we touch and or create, rather, becomes part of that. And I think for a human mind at this point, it's also easier to look at something that we have created, like a film, like, you know, an art piece of work, an artwork, music, what have you, because it is, you know, in a way it's more confined, because it comes out of us in a way, and we can break it down more easily than break down the entire world, let's say, and a film in that sense becomes easier to look at or focus on and break down. And, you know, and I also think that because what we create is still a part of the overall fabric of reality, I think that we can also see these kind of powerful, we can call them symbols or memes or even the archetypes, in some sense, that these are trying to reach out through the work that we are creating in order to either communicate or either to actually just make themselves more powerful in our world. I don't know. I mean, there's another interesting kind of component to all of this, and that has to do with the memes or the archetypes that actually kind of seek attention in the human world, or in the world of consciousness, as it were. And we also have to be wary in a way, okay, are these, you know, let's call them entities for the sake of argument. Are these entities interested in just, you know, having our focus or having our attention? Or can we actually, you know, learn and progress? And do we really want them in our lives? That's another kind of interesting component in all of this, I think, as well.
It's you're right. And I feel in what I'm getting from your saying is they're sort of alive. You know, you're realizing that your own aliveness, your own awareness, is not separate from the aliveness and awareness of the things around you, that maybe your way of perceiving is only one way of being, and everything that's happening outside of you is connected to that, intimately involved in that, and there's a relationship between them, a dynamic, fascinating relationship. But it's like they're sort of experiencing them through your eyes. The world is living through you, you know. I mean, in a way it is you. There's no real separation between those things and you, who you really are beyond things to begin with.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's we talked about that on the show a few weeks ago, the fact that we actually are individually the center of the universe, because if we think about it from our own perspective, I cannot reach out, you know, go out of myself unless I, you know, go out of body or something like that. But let's leave that to the side for now and just think of the idea of, when I'm in my conscious mind, I'm at the center of the universe, and everything that I'm looking around on, you know, is revolving around me. That's just a simple fact if you think about it, you know.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this line of reasoning is that, you know, 2012 and these themes seem to be the synchronicities are becoming more easy to spot, more vivid, more real, and through this, you know, process of consciousness awakening, increasing more synchronicities, not because you know, there are more actually. It's just because we're paying more attention to them now. And you're talking about the center in you, and what we're aligning with is the center of our galaxy, right? So there's sort of this idea that the center in you and the center outside of you, which is probably the same spot,
right?
But they're sort of coming into alignment. So our awareness of the center of who we are, the, you know, where we are actually located, the center.
Yeah.
And it, you know, basically it, the sort of key teaching that you will get from any of these Zen masters or Buddhist type individuals who I tend to look up to, you know, Alan Watts and Eckhart Tolle and all these people who seem to have this amazing connection to that, you, that, that, that sense of who you are beyond form and thought. Mm. It seems to me that this alignment with 2012 is intimately connected to our perception of this, you know, consciousness is becoming aware of itself through us. And you're, the universe itself is like a, you know, like a brain, and the earth and the sun is aligning with the center. And that's just a physical representation of a spiritual reality that's starting to happen inside of us.
You
know? So it's just the exterior world, you know, the things and the, all the material things, the internet and Heinrich and Jake and all these things that we see around us are starting to resonate with each other and starting to see how they fit together in this oneness. And this is just interacting with a realization, which is in that core, in that center. And as this process is happening, it just so happens that actual physical matter is going through the same process that you can, you know, chart and see on a graph, the age of Aquarius, the alignment with galactic center, and the 9/11 event, and all these interesting external events seem to be, probably are, there's no difference probably from, actually I would just come out and say, there's no difference between what you are seeing and experiencing and what you are and what you, and the internal, I'm saying the inside and the outside, your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, your consciousness is exactly what you're embedded in. It is what you are.
Yeah, of
course. Starts to sound like gibberish when you get closer to the core. And, but that's the point, really, because, you know, these things are beyond language and they're beyond thought and form. So when you're getting to the core, it's natural for the words you're saying and the thoughts you're using to start sounding like gibberish, because you're getting to the core where duality and all those concepts are starting to be transcended, and you're moving beyond the limitation of words. So it's, you know, all these things that we're talking about can only point, this is a very Buddhist way of thinking, it can only point, you know, there's a saying about the Buddha, he's pointing to the moon, you know, and that what that, that what that's trying to say is that it's not it's not the finger pointing at the moon that the Buddha is trying to wake you up to. It's what he's pointing towards, because you can't, with your mind, the tool that we're using, the thing, you know, which we're saying doesn't actually exist, because individual things are just cut-ups, are our, is our mind, right?
Yeah.
So you can't actually grasp the core. It's beyond the grasping. So it's beyond thought and it's beyond form, but you can point towards it because you are it. That thing that we are trying to find, that thing that we are trying to reach, the goal of all our doing and coming and going is what we already are. But you can't just, I can say it in words, but the moment you try and grasp it, right, and put it, I have it. I have two sentences that encompasses the totality. The moment you have that, it sort of slips away.
Yeah.
Because it's not that sentence. It's what that sentence is pointing towards in that very moment, which is your true nature, which is, you know, this moment right now where me and you are talking and having this experience. And
it's a discovery of the self, and it's obviously when you come in into this line of thinking, the troubles of the world, as it were, kind of dissolves in a very beautiful way. I think it's more like we are in this experience of self-discovery, and all of these wonderful things are going on around us to wake us to that fact all the time. And some people choose to look at that as troubles or problems, of course, you know, but there's much more going on beneath the surface to that, you know. It's just an experience. Yeah. It's just you discovering yourself, and this is helping you to do that. And I think it's an important point of view, if you will, especially when we're, you know, because with heightened awareness, with increase in consciousness, a lot of, you know, not only the positive things come to light, but also the negative things come to light. You know, it's this duality at play here, and we have you know, the dark side and the light side, if you will, and you know, and both of these sides, you know, increase. We can see more of it, right? You know, so we have to find that balance in between us, and I think that we are the dissolver of that duality when we reach that moment. But as you say, Jake, to try to describe that to someone else, it's like it's a moot point, because it's like telling someone else to tell them about themselves to you or whatever. You know, it's like,
because you're looking in a mirror and you're
right,
because you're trying to talk about the truth of non-separateness. So it's sort of like you're looking in a mirror telling yourself this truth, and then you realize, but I'm actually crazy if I'm telling myself this truth, because I am that truth. I know that truth.
Right.
But but we continue, because I feel there's this drama that's unfolding, and we're part of it, and it's sacred, and the entire totality of everything that is existence, the whole universe, it takes to create any given moment. So any problem, you know, war and conspiracy and all this control networks and despicable things that you can perceive that are out there, you know, the entirety brings that about. So there's a purpose for it. There's
of course,
point to it.
Yeah.
Like, how could it be disconnected from your true nature if we're saying that the source inside you and inside galactic center and inside everything, you know, is all connected to each other? So how could it be, you know, fundamentally wrong for all these things to be happening that are happening in the world? Yes, we can try and come into balance. Yes, there are things that we can do to try and alleviate stress and anger and poverty and all these things, but we can't condemn what is already here, what is already happening. You know, it's like fighting yourself, because that is still a symptom of consciousness, is many of these darker facets. And
of course,
we can bring healing to them, but the denying that that's not a part of you is true neurosis, because that's you saying that that is not me, and that is completely wrong. You know, these wars, these poverty, that is horrible, and I want nothing to do with it. But no, that is a part of you.
Yeah.
It has to be, because you're looking in a mirror, because you are that mirror.
So
all these things that are happening, is the totality bringing it about, and needs to be there. And you know, I think we can bring healing to it by that exact realization that we're talking about.
Yes.
Heals that. So I think the point of that, to begin with, of the struggling, of the suffering, is to come to that realization. Because you're not in that realization, the individual pieces of God or of consciousness that are convinced that they're separate and that the universe is dead and that, you know, it's there's this either creator God who made us, or it's like, no, it's a dead machine. It's an accident. We just evolved here.
Yeah.
You know, if you have that reality, then you're separate from your environment. Either an external God made you, or a dead universe accidentally made you, like a fungus growing on a planet that's just orbiting a sun, and it doesn't matter, you know?
Right.
So if you believe that, then you are entirely separate from the entire universe, and you feel horrible, because it is a horrible thought. And then you suffer, and then you need that suffering, because that suffering eventually will make you go, shit, I don't really want to suffer anymore.
Right.
So all that suffering is there and is totally necessary. It's this organism that we are that has these festering boils and sores. And, you know, it's in our personal lives as well. I have many personal hang-ups and things that still grate on me, tensions inside me, fears that I need to overcome, and things I want to do. You know, there's in my personal life, they're there.
Yeah.
And then I can see them in the world. And, you know, you just watch the news, right?
Right.
And you can
see
all these things.
Of course.
Or anything. You go, every day is part of that is suffering, and part of that is, you know, until we completely let go of our attachment to the idea that we are not separate from the universe. So while we climb that ladder, which seems to be in training with 2012 in my personal narrative, it seems to be for a lot of people as well. So while we climb that ladder, the suffering that we are experiencing is holy and divine and has to be there, and you can't just ignore it. I'm not saying, you know, it's a joke, it doesn't exist. I'm saying it is necessary, and it makes complete sense that it's there.
Yeah.
Because we are disconnected from who we are.
That's right. And also to put the kind of connotation on what, you know, oneself deem as negative, that's just one's own business, if you will. What I'm talking about is that I think also too many people are, you know, too keen to either focus too much on all the negativity, but some people also don't want to go there at all. But just the idea of negativity, that's your own concept of it. What is happening in the world is, you know, obviously happening for a reason and all that, but it's there. But what kind of connotation you put upon it, that's yours. And I don't think that it's necessarily a negative thing. It all depends on, you know, how you judge it. And I think that all things that happens are it's an opportunity for discovery there, and it's up to you if you want to, you know, take advantage of that or not. But if we try to push out all the negativity and all of the, you know, darker stuff that you've been talking about, we also lose that opportunity for a part of ourselves, a part of a discovery of ourselves. And I think it's important to look at all sides and all things that are happening for that simple reason, because if we avoid something too long, that's going to create a, you know, some kind of trauma that's going to come back into your life in a huge way later on. So I mean, that's kind of it's not too good to do it that way, I think, you know.
Yeah, and we're at the point where, you know, it's reasonable to imagine us destroying the planet or destroying ourselves, you know, with wars or catastrophes or who knows what. It's reasonable. You can see enough evidence externally for that sort of reality. Personally, I believe we can very easily overcome those things.
Yeah.
But they are realities, and we need to look there. And that's the point, is we're trying to get our attention into these areas where there needs the healing, because healing and attention is the same thing, actually. You know, awareness is the dissolving factor. That's, okay, I'm seeing what's happening here. I'm bringing awareness to it. It's ignorance that causes the suffering. But yeah, it's what you're talking about is making me think about this fascinating area that, you know, people seem to have trouble dealing with, and, you know, I do too. But it's really interesting. Like, how can 9/11, this horrible tragedy, that seems to have the possibility of all these conspiracies connected to it, and forces, like dark forces, you know, using these this event, you know, this conspiracy aspect to the whole thing, you know, groups using buildings in a ritualistic fashion. Maybe that was that way, maybe it wasn't that way, I don't know. Or Obama becoming president, you know, is that a dark thing, you know? Or Eckhart Tolle, you know, he's on Oprah Winfrey, is that a dark thing?
Like, right.
Is there these dark facets to this consciousness growing? What's happening there?
Yeah.
And it sort of feels to me that the amazing thing that's happening in front of us. I was asking Jim this the other day. What do you think about Obama? Because there's two camps, right now. It's like, no, he's part and parcel of the New World Order, thick as thieves with them, and this is just the newest facet in the elite's game enslave the planet, right?
Yeah.
Clever, because it's disguised as this savior figure and this amazing like thing that's happening that nobody could have seen coming. You know, how has this wonderful thing come about? Or, you know, is it this horrible thing, or is it this amazing consciousness is actually waking up, and Obama is a symptom of that? You know, we have a guy who could become president. He's black. He's totally, you know, saying all these wonderful things and whatever, you know. So there's these two forces. What is it really? You know, is it the New World Order conspiracy? Yeah. Is it the Illuminati's newest trick? or is it this amazing consciousness waking up? What's the truth? And Jim said, and this thing is both. It's both, you know.
Right.
It's yes, there is footprints of Illuminati type forces in 9/11, and yes, there's footprints of Illuminati type things in all these matters that we're discussing. But that's really the point, you know. It's that there's these two forces working together, and maybe the individuals who are participating in these conspiracies aren't aware that they're part of the good side while they're part of the bad side. Maybe they're not. But consciousness, which animates everything, is beyond all these forces that could possibly be there, right? Any sort of conspiracy, or I don't care how ancient or diabolical or embedded into the fabric of everything it is, it's still part of the totality, which underneath is always pure, is always, you know, beyond good and evil, and not in a sort of Nietzschean, like, you know, Hitler way beyond good and evil. I mean, pure, you know, like a plant that grows, you know, a pure thing, like the beauty of staring at the stars at night, you know, and not making up an idea about it, just sort of in awe of the mystery. You know, that mystery is still at the core of everything.
Yeah.
And no matter what the human forces or the human mind tries to do, that mystery is always working through it. So even if there is a conspiracy aspect to what's happening in the world, that to me is that there's a force working through that that's beyond that itself. And I wouldn't worry about that. I see it as it's a natural process. Mm. So. Mm.
That's I think that's a healthy thought, and it's a very kind of a much needed perspective to bring into your worldview in that sense. To have I'm all for kind of immersing yourself in information, whatever it is. I'm not, you know, in any way kind of want to, you know, prohibit someone to go into an area or seek into an area. I think there's too much of that going on in a way. It's too much. No, don't look at that. That's dangerous. Or you know, if you talk about UFO, you're nuts. You know, you have all of those kind of limitations all the time. And I'm all for kind of the idea of totally immersing yourself in it. And I think that will, you know, just give it some time, and eventually you will find a perspective on it and find your own kind of personal view of why something has happened, if it's good or if it's bad. And of course it matters, but it doesn't matter to anyone beyond yourself, so it's important to do it and go ahead, you know, head first, but right into it. That's the way to do it. But anyway, what I would like to do, Jake, if we begin to round things up here for this time, I want to talk a little bit more about your blog, of course, how people can find that and so forth. But also, if you have any, you know, future plans, as it were, do you have any like big posts upcoming, or any videos, or any other thing that you're kind of looking forward to doing on the website?
Well, right now I'm working on. I've been doing a few posts about Hudson Hawk, the film Hudson Hawk. This is the first time I've sort of really gone into depth in one movie, because I feel there's so much to be said about the symbolism in that movie, because it connects to my personal life and my personal synchronicities and the journey that I have walked to this very moment through Leonardo da Vinci and the horse theme in Hudson Hawk. You can go read all about it. I'm not going to go into the whole thing right now. But so I'm doing this Hudson Hawk post right now, finishing up the ideas that I've followed through Hudson Hawk, and still connecting all the other themes about K2 and Oz and all these things, and seeing new movies like WALL-E that's out there right now, and all this amazing stuff that's happening. So this personal sort of synchronicities I'm still trying to weave in to the text-based post at the blog. And then I have the potential opportunity coming up to make another movie. I've sort of quit, in a sense, my old method of doing it. I was just tired of using the limited technology that I have and the limited resources I have. But it seems like the doors are starting to open that will allow me to make bigger, better productions in the near future. So I want to return to the, you know, it's very important that they move. Text is wonderful, and that's an aspect I intend to explore as well. But when they move, then that's the point. A movie is moving,
right?
And then you can. It's really a vivid way of showing the synchronicities. So I definitely want to return to that in the nearest future possible.
Interesting.
Sounds and I'll, like I'll just post about it at the blog as things develop. So I don't know.
Beautiful. Tell how people can find your blog.
Well, the blog is rundonotwalk.blogspot.com is the URL. You can put my name into Google. It's Jake Kotze. And Jake Kotze blob is also an easy way of getting it. That I think is the top. I think is the only Jake Kotze blob out there. And the Brave New World Order has also got all the links up to that still, which is the bravenewworldorder.blogspot.com, I believe. Or yeah, I'm sure links on Red Ice can get you there. And it's indeed really easy. The internet. It's a wonderful tool that I'm really happy to be here and to be part of this, and it's amazing.
Indeed, and keep up the good work, Jake. Thank you again for the update. Very nice hearing some of the work that you've been doing, and keep us posted on what's going on, okay?
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Henrik.
Thank you.
Away above the chimney tops, that's where you